Welcome to the first episode of Posted. I'm Stephen Heller. Poster House is a new museum at 119 West 23rd Street in Manhattan. The very first poster museum in the United States, dedicated to documenting the cultural, social, commercial, and political impact of posters. Poster House is currently offering two very distinct public exhibitions. The first is the work of famed Art Nouveau pioneer Alphonse Mucha. Here to tell us about Mucha is the chief curator of Poster House, Angelina Lippert. So Angelina, with all the potential subjects for your first exhibition, why did you select Mucha as your poster boy?
Well, since we're opening a new cultural institution in New York, I wanted to start with something that a lot of people would be familiar with. Even if they don't know Mucha by name, his posters are some of the most loved and recognizable in history. At the same time, we don't want to be a place that just shows classical retrospectives. So whenever we take on a widely known artist, we aim to look at them under a new lens. In this case, we're looking solely at Mucha's Paris period, which is when he became famous, and how he elevated and made the role of women in advertising more complex. That particular aspect of his career hasn't been explored in depth before.
So what should we know about Mucha as we view and walk through the exhibit?
Sure. Well, Mucha was born the same year that Abraham Lincoln was elected president of the United States. He lived through the formation of Czechoslovakia, World War I, the invention of the light bulb, the phonograph, the moving picture, and he died not long after the Nazis interrogated him in 1939. Our show begins on a fateful night when he was a nobody, a struggling illustrator living as Gauguin's roommate above a cafe. He's checking proofs at the Le Mercier printing house when he suddenly is tasked with creating a poster for Sarah Bernhardt. The Sarah Bernhardt, who was the most famous woman in the world at that time. And what he creates breaks all the rules. It's life-size. It's incredibly detailed. The colors are these delicate pastel tones accented by gold. No one had seen a poster like this before. So when it went up just before New Year's Day, people were like, whoa, what is that?
So was he the Andy Warhol of his day?
Maybe more like Shepard Fairey. But he definitely became the most in-demand advertising artist in Paris. What we look at in the show is how the women, and almost all of the figures in his posters are women, how these women were markedly different from the female figures in advertising that came before them. If you look at the early posters of the 1880s and 1890s, the women are bubbly, laughing, offering you their bodies alongside whatever products they're selling. Those posters are great. They're bawdy and bouncy. But then you get Mucha, and suddenly you have these women who are not performing for you. They're confident, self-assured. If they're being seductive with a product, they're doing it for their own pleasure, not yours. And I think that derived from the fact that his big break came from Sarah Bernhardt. She broke every rule of polite society, but got away with it because of who she was. And she'd worked with many poster artists before Mucha, but never really liked how they presented her. Mucha depicted her as she wanted to be seen and wanted the world to see her. And that partnership allowed him to become famous and projected a brand of female empowerment upon all the women in his posters.
It's amazing how a poster artist had such an impact on the celebrities of their day.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about Art Nouveau. He wasn't the only Art Nouveau artist, but his work seems to represent all Art Nouveau, wouldn't you say?
Well, he is without a doubt the most representative artist of French Art Nouveau, and certainly the most widely known. His big contribution is that he brought Art Nouveau to the street. Prior to him, Art Nouveau was pretty much only embraced by a particular type of rich woman. Think of it as the Stevie Nicks look of the 1890s. Not a lot of people can successfully pull that off. So Mucha comes along and takes that look out of high society, or at least out of society trying to be high society, and he puts it outside for everyone to enjoy. Remember, this is a culture that has just gone through the Industrial Revolution, where the machine and order and efficiency became God. Art Nouveau is a reaction to that. It celebrates the sinuous forms of nature, unbridled sensuality, etherealness. But at the same time, it's also easily replicated through mechanization. The floral patterns that Mucha and other artists ultimately create are reproduced ad infinitum for household goods and other products. And Mucha started all of that. He took a high fashion style and made it endlessly reproducible for a middle class audience. Think of him as what happens when H&M sees the latest Chanel runway show. A few weeks later, we all have cheap boucle suits. Mucha did that for Art Nouveau. He kept it beautiful, but he also made it accessible.
So Mucha was what we call today an influencer, right?
Sure. But unlike a Kardashian, Mucha's big problem was that his style became too popular. His studio was open 6 days a week from 9 a.m. to 1 a.m. Tourists and fans lined up literally around the block to meet with him. He was under a very exploitative contract with the printer Champenois, where he had to create endless designs for them so that they could sell them off to third parties for packaging design, other posters, curtains, everything. And not being the best at confrontation, rather than try to renegotiate his contract, he fled Paris in 1904, moved to America, and attempted to be a portrait painter.
I never realized what an entrepreneur he was, but I also never knew, and I'm sure other people who are fans did not know, that he had moved to the United States, since he's so deeply associated with European art and design.
Mm-hmm.
So how did he succeed here?
Well, he had a long, if uninspired, career in the United States. So when he first came to New York, his arrival made the front page news. Then in 1921, the Brooklyn Museum hosted a retrospective of his work. It was customary for an artist to receive the admission fee as payment for a show like that. But Mucha was so adamant that he wanted everyone to see his work that he waived that fee. America is also where Mucha spent most of his educational career. Yeah, he made a few posters for a failed Broadway show or a few regional products in the United States. But the bulk of his income from that time was from teaching. He moved wherever there was an opportunity. So he taught briefly at the New York School of Applied Design for Women and then the Philadelphia School of Art. But ultimately, he ended up at the Art Institute of Chicago, where he taught alongside Whistler, who absolutely hated him, but loved his draftsmanship.
Being hated by Whistler is quite an accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
And being an unsuccessful illustrator in the U.S. was probably very challenging for him.
Mm-hmm.
So how did he earn the incredible reputation he enjoyed?
Well, when those opportunities in the U.S. ran dry, Mucha returned to Prague, where he completed his Slavic painting series, The Slav Epic, which was a celebration of the Czech people. It's huge in both size and number of canvases, and one of the most important cultural objects in the Czech Republic. Up through the 1960s, that was his primary legacy. Then, in 1963, the Victoria and Albert Museum in London needed an inexpensive show. Their brilliant curator found a bunch of Mucha posters in the basement, and suddenly they had one of the most wildly successful shows of the season. A two-part Mucha poster show was then staged at the Grosvenor Gallery nearby, and that launched the Art Nouveau poster craze of the 1960s. Suddenly, psychedelic rock posters are featuring Mucha's women in neon, smoking a joint, and polyester disco shirts, some of which I own, have his figures swirling within wild patterns. Despite all this, his posters have not been shown in their own exhibition in New York since that Brooklyn Museum show in 1921.
I think everybody is going to enjoy the Mucha show. They're all going to find something in it that's familiar and a lot in it that is not. But let's move on to the second gallery. 1992, the year the Berlin Wall was completely demolished, up from the ashes comes a design firm, Cyan, in the former East Germany in Mitte, Berlin, began working on their own style of poster design. In the smaller gallery, you've taken some of their posters, which represent their idiosyncratic typography, and the first hint of contemporary modernist culture in the capital of the former GDR, and you've made that into a show. So as curator, Angelina, would you provide a little background into Cyan and what you've selected to show and how you came to know about them?
Sure. I first came across Cyan in my previous job at an auction house. I was literally going through the basement and found these posters, and they were unlike anything I'd seen. They were visually so complicated and vibrant. The colors explode off the page. The layers in them act like one of those magic eye prints where the longer you look at them, the more you see. My boss had no idea what they were, so we ended up selling them for next to nothing. And I couldn't even figure out who they were by until I reverse image searched them and discovered that MoMA had a nearly complete collection that I don't think they've ever shown. And that group was called Cyan. And that was maybe 8 years ago. And those images totally stayed with me. So when I was asked for suggestions on something more designy, something more modern to complement MUCA, I instantly knew what I wanted to explore.
It's very special to have this exhibition on Cyan, in part because they're such a mystery. They produced posters for cultural institutions and still do, but few people in the United States know them. So what was the process of making this exhibition happen? How did you get in touch with them? How did this exhibition come to fruition?
Well, the show turned out to be far more involved than originally anticipated. There is so little written about them in either English or in their native German. And all of the prominent graphic designers and art historians who I spoke with said they knew of their work, but didn't feel comfortable writing or commenting on them because they were too complicated. And they are, as a group, full of ideological contradictions, which I think makes them even more interesting. So I ended up doing a lot of original research simply by interviewing them because they're still a practicing design firm in Berlin. So to give you a bit of background, Cyan was formed by Detlef Fiedler and Daniela Hoff right after the fall of the Berlin Wall. East Germany had been one of the most technologically advanced areas within the communist bloc, so much so that high-quality printing was a point of pride for them. And that really comes into play when you look at Cyan's posters. The printing level is just incredibly precise.
Yeah, I'm very impressed by the printing. Jealous of the printing, in fact. It reminds me a little bit of the most beautiful of the psychedelic posters. But these are things that need to be seen in the original form, not in books, wouldn't you say?
Totally. Now, combine that fine printing quality with black market access to computers and software programs. So the wall has just fallen. They formulate this new advertising agency. It's primarily the two of them. They have other people cycle through, but they're the two people behind the design and the concept. And someone smuggled in a computer inside a television for them. And they start fooling around with Photoshop and Quark Express. And it was also like this happy accident that you end up with a printer that's very receptive to what they want to do. Because without the help of that printer, this would not have been able to happen.
Their work is so colorful. And that takes me back to East Germany. I was there before the wall fell, walking down the main boulevard, whatever it was, the Unter den Linden or the Kurfürstendamm. And everything was gray. There was no color whatsoever to be found. And their work is color plus.
Yes.
Do you feel that they were influenced by their surroundings and rebelling against their surroundings?
Oh, I think that they consciously rebel against everything. Talking to them, they're against anything that's any kind of censorship, control, rules. They don't believe in those things. So they're not socialists and they're not capitalists. They're like these utopian anarchists in that their work is not communistic in that it is against the regime. It's against the censorship that would have been imposed on them prior to the fall of the wall. But their work is also not for products. It's not really capitalism because they hate capitalism. They don't like standard ads because they view them as something called fast food advertising. So that's why when you see a poster by them, they want you to have to stay there, look at it for minutes, which is a hard thing for anyone to do in advertising. You cannot expect someone to stand in front of an ad for minutes to understand it. So they go against all the standard rules of advertising in their ads.
This makes them very psychedelic.
Yeah.
The idea that you shouldn't be able to see a poster from 10 feet away, but that you have to look 10 centimeters away.
Totally. Let's say the poster is 3 feet tall. Like the layers of photography, it's usually two. You'll be able to oscillate between the two from 10 feet away, and the bright color is meant to draw you closer. And then when you get there, you have to really look to read everything to figure out what the hell's going on. It's funny because as a new institution, we're telling people what a poster is. And then in the small gallery, we're like, and now something that doesn't fit any of these rules.
Which actually does fit the rules, because posters have changed from being posted on walls to being posted on a screen.
Yeah, no, exactly. But these pieces actually don't work on the screen. Showing these to my coworkers before we got the posters, they were like, oh, these are fine. But then you see them in person, like, oh, wow, these are really interesting. So the materiality is still incredibly important to appreciating these items.
They've never had a show in the U.S.
Not that I know of, no.
It's hard to find their work anywhere in the U.S. Mm-hmm. How are they responding to this newfound exposure?
Well, they're coming to the opening, which is very exciting. I really can't wait to meet them because they've just been incredibly generous with their time and also willingness for me to pick apart their process and their history, which a lot of artists are very controlling over how they're seen. And they've been very open to me asking weird questions, tricky questions.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how people respond to a show on Mucha and a show on Cyan, which are as contradictory and contrasting as you can get. Both shows are on view at Poster House until October 6th. Poster House has developed an exciting and diverse array of public programming to complement this first series of shows, from flower crown making workshops in the style of Mucha's Maidens to drink and draw sessions with live models. Please check their website for more details. Posted is produced by Pike Malinowski, Angelina Lippert, and myself, with original music by Bob Pounding. Executive producer is Julia Knight. Thanks to Debbie Millman from Design Matters. In October, there'll be two new shows at Poster House, one on the golden age of Ghanaian film posters, and the other on posters from the 2017 Women's March. Hope to see you there. For more events, subscribe to this audio newsletter so we can keep you posted. I'm Stephen Heller. Talk to you soon.